Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Hey, Nathan, it's been a crazy year for cars and trucks.
So many things have gone wrong for the regular consumer. Everything from chip shortages to COVID to slowdowns. I mean, it's been a really tough year.
So, you know, it's one of those, like, good news, bad news situations, right? The good news is if you're selling a car, it's a hell of a time to sell a car.
Oh, yeah.
Or truck. But if you're buying a car...
Yeah, so even used cars, right now it is a seller's paradise. Cars are going for way above what they should be going for in a regular market.
So I'm going to give you a number, okay? It's going to blow your mind, and then I'll tell you what that number is.
Okay.
17,432.
I'm going to say a Nissan Sentra.
Nope. That is the price increase of the number one most... priced increase car from 20 to 2021. Can you believe that? $17,000 price increase. And in this video, dude, we're going to be talking
about... Wait, that's the price increase? That's not the price of a car?
That's the price increase, yeah.
Oh, whoa! Yeah, okay, that was not what I was expecting.
We're going to be talking about the top 10 most costly increase vehicles, both new and used.
Okay.
From this time last year to this time this year. And that was a study done by IC Cars, so thank you very much. On the low end, the average increase of a new car is 25.1% in a year. And on the high end, that number is 33.9%. So what car do you think that is? I'm not going to tell you. If you can't guess it, you have to wait till we get to number one.
Mustang? Ford Mustang?
You're close. It's a sports car, but it's not. And three of these vehicles, four of them are trucks.
Oh, well, yeah.
Right, so let's start with the new cars, and then we'll work our way down to the old cars. And as is always the case with TFL, we'll do it from top 10 going down. So we'll stop at number 10, and then we'll go down to number one.
Cool. Okay, sounds good.
All right, number 10, Nathan, is the Range Rover Sport. It had an increase of $11,969, or about 25%. So almost $12,000. And we can talk about these cars, too.
Yeah, well, they're paying $12,000 too much for that truck right now. I mean, for that vehicle. I'm sorry, but the Sport, it's okay. But, you know, we all know there's some issues with the reliability. But it's also just not worth the price that they're... $12,000 more is too much.
You think?
Oh, way too much.
Oh, yeah, well, you know.
$2,000 at a regular markup from dealers, which they tend to do because they have no scruples. Yes, okay, that'd be fine. I mean, understandable, I should say. But when it comes to that much money for that vehicle, no bueno.
Yeah, so there is some JLR news, of course, and we can talk about that. Number one, Jaguar has basically gone all electric. So
They're going all electric. Yep, exactly. I mean, it's not happening tomorrow.
Right. So Land Rover and Range Rover are going to stick with, obviously, the ability to have, at least for now, internal combustion cars. And as you know, we have a Land Rover Defender, and the latest news is that there's now, because of the chip shortage, a one-year wait if you want a Defender.
One year wait.
So, one year wait if you want a Defender, and if you want a Range Rover Sport, it's going to cost you at least $60,000. That's kind of the entry level, right?
Uh-huh.
And that's an increase of 25% over this time last year.
I'll tell you what, Roman, once we get through the list of the new cars, let's discuss why there's this increase.
So yeah, about the chips.
Yeah, go into the weeds just a little tiny bit.
Yeah, okay. Number nine, and these are ranked by percentages. So the number the dollar number is going to be lower, but the percentage is higher. This vehicle has increased almost 26% by a factor of 2,313, and it is the Mitsubishi Mirage, which I believe is one of the least expensive cars in America.
Yeah, it is.
To start with.
Yeah, they were one of the few car companies that up until recently actually sold a car in the United States for less than $10,000. Now, granted, it was almost impossible to get one for that price, but really, they sit around $12,000 to $14,000 for the fairly cheap ones. They can go all the way up to about $20,000.
And now they're like $16,000.
It's just, and that's the base price.
Yeah, I gotta say, with those little 13-inch wheels, it's one of the cars that I would probably stay away from if I were.
They're not okay. Well, you know, honestly, Mitsubishi, I've been trying to get one of these to test.
Really? Yeah, we would.
Well, and the reason why is because it gets phenomenal gas mileage, over 40 miles per gallon for a non-hybrid vehicle. It's really good, but if you get the CVT version of the car and you bring it to the Rocky Mountains with a little tiny, you know, three-cylinder engine, it's not going to go very far or very fast. But they do have a manual transmission version. So I've been asking Mitsubishi, please send us one of these so we can do an MPG run.
If I call it a dud, that's not going to help.
Yeah. No. And the thing is that it's the car has been generally
plasticky.
It's very plasticky. It's very cheap.
But
you know, Roman, to be fair, it's a very inexpensive car for people who can't afford a nicer car.
Yeah. The other thing I want to see is what the safety stats on that.
It's okay. I mean, compared to older cars, it's much better. It does have ABS.
Top safety pick plus, is it?
It's not quite there, no. But it's also not, you know, there are no red flags for it being completely unsafe. So keep that in mind as well.
So if you were to pick, like, you know, the duds in the car world, that would certainly be one of them. And there's also a Ford that falls into that category.
Well, there was.
There is a Ford that falls into that category.
You're kidding.
I'll give you a hint, it's built in India.
Oh, I know what that is.
Yeah.
It's EcoSport.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, when we sold our Raptor this week, right?
Yeah.
I was talking to the owner of the dealership, and I'm like, how do those sell? And he kind of looked at me like I just asked, you know,
the worst question ever.
And he said, okay, I'm going to tell you what we did. What we do, we put them into the, like, loaner fleet. So when people go and, you know, basically have their car or truck serviced at the Ford dealership, they get the EcoSport, and then they discount them. And then they put them on the lot for a couple $1,000s less, and then they sell. And he said usually they have like 15 of them lined up. He looked out, you know, and there were like four because, once again, there are no inventory of new cars.
Right. Right now it's really tough to get it. Thing is that I've actually looked at their sales numbers. We did some reports recently, and they sell them. They do sell. But it is because the dealerships are very inventive on ways of selling them. And, they're also very popular fleet vehicles. I've seen them in rental fleets left and right. Those that remain. Yeah. There's not that many rental fleets out there.
Even those are selling out. And, you know, the thing about these numbers is, you know, the Tundra is number 8. 26% increase, $8,000.
That doesn't surprise me too much.
But, you know, this is all profit for the dealerships.
Oh, God, yeah.
And for the vehicle manufacturers. So, I mean, you know, we're being a little rough on some of these cars, but let's face it, manufacturers and dealers are now making money hand over fist because there's no more discounting of trucks. There's no more, you know, if you can get a discounted vehicle now, you're doing really well. But
yeah, and we managed to pull that off with a Subaru recently. But for the most,
because I ordered it like two months ago.
Well, that's exactly it. And right now, you know, guys, if you really don't want to try to haggle with these people, and good luck with that, you're going to have to wait a little while before prices start to settle down. And this is, as far as I'm concerned, I consider a lot of dealers who are pushing these prices and ridiculous increases as being somewhat unscrupulous because they're taking advantage of a program right now where everybody is in the same league. They can't get cars because there aren't that many chips or any in some cases, and inventory is shrinking. So they're taking advantage of that, and they're taking advantage of the buyer.
I was talking to a Mazda dealer. He said he usually has like 150 Mazdas in the lot. Less than 50. He says if somebody comes in and says, I want to haggle, he's like, go find whatever Mazda you want and go someplace else because we're getting full MSRP.
Yep. And that's the minimum. And you know what? Full MSRP, fair enough. But it's these price increases over MSRP that are really iffy. So should we continue?
Yeah. And let's talk about the next one, number 7. That's the Chevrolet Camaro, 26.7% increase or $6,582. I didn't think Camaros were actually selling.
Yeah, they are. And they recently announced that they will be continuing them through next year as well. I think originally there was a rumor that they were going to discontinue them kind of soon, but they still have some demand. And I think it's a really good car. I don't know if it's worth a major increase, but, you know, so be it. That's the way it is. It competes with the Mustang. They have currently 5 different powertrains, I believe. There's a 4-cylinder turbo, a 6-cylinder. By the way, a really good 6-cylinder, I got to say. And 2 different V8s, and then there's also the super hot V8. The ZL1 or whatever they're calling it now. So they have 5 different trims or several different trims, convertible version. Really, just, you know, it goes directly against the Mustang. And really, those two compete directly against each other, far more so than, say, something like a Challenger.
By the way, I was wrong. These are used cars that we're talking about. Sorry.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, so we're talking used, not new car prices.
Okay.
It's increase. Okay?
All right.
Yeah, I read this wrong, Nathan.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, top 10 worst cars. In other words, these are the top 10 worst cars to buy right now.
Should we start over?
No, let's keep going.
Okay.
We make mistakes. We're not perfect.
Okay.
It's okay. It's a podcast. All right.
The title will be different when you see the actual...
Yeah, because I was looking at the prices of these things, and the price seems like, you know, very low, so they're not new car prices.
Okay. So continuing on the used car prices on these vehicles.
Chevrolet Silverado, number 6, 1500, 27% increase, $7,960 increase.
Okay, well,
yeah, there you go.
That's not much of a surprise for pickup trucks. Pickup trucks are the biggest selling vehicles in the United States by far. And Chevrolet, if you combine Chevrolet and GMC totals, they go head to head with Ford's F-Series totals.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, not a big surprise there. What's the next one?
Number 5, this is the one that is actually pretty... crazy, because I thought this segment was dead. It's the Mercedes-Benz S-Class.
No kidding.
Yeah, because I didn't think anybody was buying big old sedans, right? That's increased 27.9% or $16,198.
And that is a used S-Class.
Yeah.
Wow.
Wow, yeah.
Beautiful car. I mean, amazing interior and all that, but I have a hard time. German cars are having a hard time maintaining their value. And so this is a little... perplexing.
But not this one. I mean, not everything is going up in value.
Yeah, everything is going up in value. So normally vehicles that tank very quickly aren't tanking as quickly.
Yeah.
I guess that's a good thing for some people.
Well, I think it's, you know, they're not depreciating as quickly.
They're adding this extra price. So even though the value does depreciate, still the extra price on top of that because of the shortage is still there. So, you know, you're kind of in trouble one way or the other if you're a buyer.
So basically we're talking about, you know, the price change from last year at this time to this year. So now we're talking about the next car, which is number 4, the GMC Sierra, which is actually a truck. We're looking at a 28.6% increase or $9,418, dude.
So even greater than the Silverado.
Yeah.
Well, that makes sense. I
mean, and then number 3 is a Ram.
Wow, really?
Yeah, number 3 is a Ram at 28.8%. That's up $8,000.
$8,000 more for a used Ram.
Yeah, the next one is just mind-blowing, though. Number 2. Can you guess what it is?
Ford F-150?
No, it's a Mercedes. Come on, you can guess what it is. It's the Mercedes that I've always wanted, but could never afford, and now I will never afford.
Oh, that would be the GT?
No, come on. What Mercedes do I want? There's only one Mercedes I lust after, and it's not a sports car. It's not a luxury car.
Oh, I don't.
It's an off-roader.
Oh, you want a G-Wagon?
Yes, of course. I've always wanted a G-Wagon.
Sorry, I didn't equate that with Mercedes.
Yes. Yes.
It's its own thing.
Remember when I ran over you with that?
I certainly do.
How in love I was with that 4x4 squared. You remember that?
Yeah, so much in love with it that you decided to leave the bumper on the highway at one point.
That wasn't his fault. I would like to say the bumper left itself on the highway.
It detached itself and committed suicide.
It was so ugly and new that it... Well, let me tell that story.
Yeah,
so,
it's a really funny story.
My dream car for a long time was the G-Wagon. And, of course, at the end of the first generation, right, which just happened recently, they came out with a 4x4 squared. And they were like $250,000.
Yeah, and they had some really unique suspension setup. They were really
portal axles.
Yeah, portal axles and real monster.
So for the, that was it 2 years ago or 3 years ago now for the LA Auto Show, Mercedes lent me one.
Mm-hmm.
We decided to go to Hungry Valley, mm-hmm. north of LA, and take it off-road. And what they did to make it street legal so that other cars wouldn't like porpoise underneath it was they added this really kind of tacked on like double stainless steel bar bumper. Remember what that thing looked like? It looked like something that was just stuck
on. It looked like a musical instrument. It almost looked like a flute. It's not
like two flutes stuck together.
Yeah, two flutes stuck together. It was really thin, you know, metal. We're not talking about something that looks like it's structurally sound, but Mercedes just did the bare minimum to get through the requirement from the Department of Transportation to have a bumper hanging low enough, or a component of it, to stop a car from going directly underneath it in a rear-end accident.
Yeah.
But it's very flimsy.
Yeah, so we took it to Hungry Valley, and we decided to actually run Nathan over with it because it's so tall.
Yeah.
It was fine.
Yeah, so they took the largest human being that they have, a TFL, laid him on the ground and said, okay, let's drive over you.
And then that's a good video if you want to look at that video. Fun. And then we decided, because it was so unstoppably great with the portal axles, to go over this berm, right? And then when I went over the berm, the bumper actually caught and kind of bent up just a little bit.
Just a little tiny bit.
And I looked at it. It was held on by like four bolts, and I was like, yeah, it's fine. So that night I go to pick up my wife, and you know, LA traffic, 405, mm-hmm. right? And oh my God, the bumper in the middle of LA traffic just decides to fall off on one side. So now I'm driving down the road like at 9 o'clock at night, sparks are flying, and the bumper's holding on by one bolt.
Oh, and caveat, he's trying to impress his wife because he's kind of hoping that at one point in time, hey, honey, maybe we should buy one of these used or whatever.
Yeah,
and all of a sudden,
yeah, she's too smart for that. So I was able to actually undo the bumper, stick it in the vehicle, because it's so long, right? It's stuck into the passenger compartment.
Right.
So I go to pick her up at, is it Bob Hope, small airport up in Burbank? It's Bob Hope, right?
Yeah, it is Bob Hope.
Yeah, Bob Hope, yeah. Burbank, pick her up at the airport, and there's a stinky, you know, that's been dragging on the ground bumper in the passenger well compartment. And she's like, what the hell is this? And I was like, oh, well, it's the bumper to the $250,000 Mercedes.
Yeah, you should have tried my thing, which would have been, you didn't see any bumper. There's nothing in here. You saw nothing.
Anyway, what happened was that... where was I going with this? That she did not like the vehicle. She could not get into it because you had to like have a pole vault into it.
Yeah. It's so funny seeing these things driving around LA and like, you know, Rodeo Drive and these tiny little people in them. It's just like, come on.
And the, you know, the net effect is that the G-Wagon has increased 33.2% or $37,000.
So that's on top of the price. Now, this is used. So on top of the used price of this vehicle, you're paying for basically another whole vehicle.
If you had bought it last year, it would have been $37,000.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
All right, well, let's move on.
The number one, the one you couldn't guess, that increased $17,000 or 33.9%. The G-Wagon only went 33.2%. What do you think it is? Come on. This is a sports car. It's the sports car every YouTuber has to have.
Yeah, the Corvette.
Yes, that's right.
You know why I know that?
How do you know that?
It's right behind me.
Oh, there you go.
It had to be.
Yeah, it had to be the Corvette.
I'm sorry, guys. I mean, it's a dead giveaway. Even I can figure this one out. The thing about the Corvette is that they really knocked it out of the park when they designed this brand new one. At first, I wasn't really into it. They got rid of manual transmission. They put the engine into the back, you know, all this other stuff. But especially in this blue, it's outstanding to look at. Up close, it's even better than when you see the pictures. And Roman's driven way more than I have, and you got to acknowledge the performance and handling in this car is just incredible for the price.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the Europeans are kind of snooty when it comes to their sports cars, but we have built in America a car to rival those guys.
By a significant margin.
Yeah, and we'll never get the credit for it because, you know, it's a Corvette and it's got all this baggage, but it is up there with any, you know, three or four times as expensive European sports car in terms of its looks, in terms of its handling. People always, especially in Europe, kind of poo-poo it for the interior, but I think the interior is just as nice.
Much better now. Oh, my God.
Yeah, yeah. So I see, you know, is it worth $17,000 more? I'm not sure. I mean, you know, GM, they stopped production recently of the Corvette. And it wasn't because of the chips.
Yeah.
No, it wasn't because of chips.
Well, that was part of the reason. They
said specifically it wasn't chips.
It wasn't chips.
No, they said it was supply issues. Supply side issues, not chips.
Okay. Well, it was during COVID
like last week they announced it.
Yeah. So, you know, you can equate that with, you know, the COVID slowdown and how everything. Remember, there's hundreds of companies that feed into one major company in terms of part suppliers. So it could be any number of those that slowed down.
All right. So are you ready for the second list, which I got wrong originally? But this is the top 10 vehicles that have increased the least or actually have decreased.
Okay, that's a good thing. So this is good for buyers now.
Well, you'll see. It's kind of good. So at number 10 is the Subaru Impreza, which has only increased $1,272 or 7.6%. So it's still increased, but it's the least amount of increase.
Okay, so you're paying a little over a grand more for a car that... Honestly, it's a perfectly good car for all weather and for budget-minded people that get really good mileage. It is the little brother of the one that we just bought in terms of it doesn't have the big lift kit or anything like that. I almost bought one for my wife with a manual transmission. You know why we didn't do it, aside from the dealership not being great?
Because you didn't want a CVT?
No, it had a manual.
Oh, it had a manual.
Yeah, you can get the manual.
Because you didn't... I don't know. Why didn't you do it?
A funny thing happened. We were actually test driving it, and it was in the price area we wanted. And my wife went into a driveway and pulled up, and we bottomed out little tiny bit because the Impreza is actually really low to the ground.
It doesn't have that 8.7 inches.
No, because we weren't looking at the Crosstrek, which was more expensive. So anyway, that was why we didn't get it. But it's a perfectly good car. I do recommend it with the manual transmission. I think Roman would as well. Let's move on to the next car.
Before we do that, I just wanted to do a big shout out to all the patrons that
support
this podcast. So if you guys, this is a much different animal from what we do usually on YouTube. I think it's much more, unscripted, as you can tell.
Considering the big mistake we made in the beginning, oops.
Oops, yeah. But much more kind of personal in some ways and much more free-flowing in terms of our opinions. You know, we have to be a little bit more... I would say
real
planned or structured in the videos.
This
is kind of more free-flowing. So if you love that, we'd appreciate your support on our Patreon page. Mm-hmm. It's patreon.com/TFLcar. We'd love to have you, give us any amount of money you can so that we can keep doing these things. We've actually added, besides the YouTube channels, we've added the podcast now. Because I think people like listening to them either while they're running or while they're driving.
And there's two different podcast channels.
Yeah, there's this one, and then you've been featured on both, and there's a truck channel as well.
Yep.
So it's added a huge amount of work to everybody's load because we're still doing
all the videos. Seven different video channels, four different websites. Yeah.
So if you guys appreciate this kind of much more candid discussion, and you want to keep us in office space, and what's your favorite food, dude?
Japanese.
Yeah, sushi, there you go.
Yeah, but there is
Nathan
more to this.
Nathan has expensive taste.
I do, because I'm an expensive type of guy. But also, remember, patrons, on top of that, if you have questions and you want them read on TFL Talk, either one of
ours. Yeah, we're going to start doing that. Right now, the perks that the patrons, I won't say Patreons, but they're not Patreons, they're patrons, Kat, is that we post, our most popular and our most kind of most production-worthy videos, like the series we're doing,
right.
Back, No Payment Needed, there first, so you get a preview of what's coming up ahead of everybody else.
Right.
And we're going to start, answering questions on this show.
On truck.
On truck on the podcast. So if you have any questions, we'll start answering them. And by the way, if you do have any questions, we'd love actually to get video questions.
Oh, that would be fantastic.
So just you could take your phone and just aim it at yourself.
And
record the question and send it to us. Just send it to us at info@TFLcar, or if you want to do a truck, ask@TFLtruck.com. Either one of those works.
Please keep language clean, and let's stay away from anything that might be considered a topic that would be taboo.
And if you're having a hard time transferring, it's a big file, we do have a WeTransfer where you can just use WeTransfer to send it and email us for that, and we'll send you the link to that, and you can send it to us. So we'd love to answer those questions. All right, let's keep going, dude.
Yeah.
Number nine, Honda HR-V, 6.9% increased. We've gone down from 7.6, or $1,200 about.
Okay, now the HR-V is really close to getting a complete update and possibly becoming an all-new vehicle. The rumor is that the next generation will be a hybrid, which makes sense. Honda is moving towards hybridization? Yeah, okay, with their new vehicles. So the current model, now if you get a really older one, like the first generation, because there's technically two generations HR-Vs, you can get a manual transmission with front-wheel drive. Second generation, which is the current model, you can't. But it comes with a continuously variable transmission, and it comes with Honda quality, which I think is quite good. But the most important part of all the HR-Vs is the interior setup.
So you just drove the Taos, which is a new Volkswagen. Which would you get? The
HR-V? Oh, the Taos.
Really?
Yeah. The Taos will drive circles around it. It has a really sharp little turbocharged engine, 1.5, great power. I'm not in love with the transmission, which is a DSG. In the Taos, but there's a whole video out there with me driving it and talking about
it. We just published it yesterday.
Yeah, just put it up.
Yeah, so check it out.
But I really think it's the best Volkswagen product I've driven. I would buy it over an Atlas if I had the same money. I would buy it over the new Tiguan. It's that good.
It looks like a baby Tiguan.
It is. It's a baby Tiguan, but it's got great space, and the suspension setup is beautiful for a little vehicle like that. But the HR-V does have a big caveat, a big trump card, I should say, and that is its interior design. It is one of the most flexible interior setups ever, and you can put amazing amounts of things in this really tiny little crossover. So that's the HR-V's appeal in my book. And it's a fairly well put together vehicle. So there it is. Is it worth, was it $1,200 more? Yeah, maybe.
Well, you know, I mean, people did get those stimulus checks, so now we're in stimulus check money.
Yeah, so you blow your stimulus check in order to pay for the premium on the vehicle that you shouldn't have to pay
Nathan,
for.
Or, you know, if you really want to go wild, get scratch tickets and maybe you could.
Yeah, there you go.
Actually, afford that G-Wagon if you hit it right.
Get $1,000 worth of scratch tickets. You heard it here first, folks.
I was thinking about that. It's like the government gives you money, and if you go get those scratch tickets, you just give it right back to them.
in essence, yeah. So it's a full, you know, it's a full circle.
Full circle, exactly. The circle of taxable life in America.
All okay, right, number we're eight. Not going to go into that anymore.
No, we don't do politics. Number eight is the CX-3. It's up 6.3% or just about $1,000.
That's crazy.
CX-3 is
Well, that's a problem for me. You know why? CX-3 is a perfectly good car, but it's being discontinued.
Yeah, I know.
They're actually getting rid of them. And
the Mazda 6, too.
Yeah. The
in
Mazda
America.
6. But the Mazda 6 is going to get an interesting replacement, we hear. The CX-3 is going away completely, and it's being replaced sort of by the CX-30, which will take its place as the smallest crossover in Mazda's lineup. And it's a great crossover. The thing about the CX-3 is that it's based on the Mazda 2 platform. It's tiny. It's no bigger inside than my wife's Mini Countryman, which is one of the smallest vehicles in its class for a crossover. It's also not very fast, although it handles very good.
It is sexy.
Yeah, and I think that the CX-3 is a very good-looking little car, but it's small. So keep that in mind if you're going to go and spend the premium.
You know what Mazda needs? They need to come back with the Mazda Speed.
Without a doubt.
There's just really, right now, the problem with Mazda is, you know, at least with Subaru, you still have the WRX and the STI, right? With Mazda, you've got no excitement in the showroom.
Well, you do have the MX-5. You do have the Miata. And the Miata is an exciting, fun little car.
Oh, yeah, it is, but it's also...
It's all the only one they have.
Yeah, and they've been around a long time.
Well, yeah, they invented the segment.
And a small, you know, better British convertible is not exactly, you know, going to rile the blood of most millennials.
Well, they sell, I mean, for a small two-passenger Japanese convertible,
most,
they sell
if
quite
you
well.
Want that car, you'll get the used one. Right,
yeah.
Because there's a boatload of used ones out there.
Yeah, and it's not on our list, but it's
when I say used ones, I mean like first or second gen.
Yeah, I love the first gen. I don't fit very well in the first gen, though. Second and third gens I fit better in. But think about the Mazda company as a whole is that they went upper class. You've seen their
interiors.
Yeah,
so like you had, you know, like Chevys, and then you had Mercedes, and then kind of in the middle were Volvos. And now Volvo's trying to go into that kind of premium segment, and now Mazda's
Mercedes.
Trying to fill that kind of Volvo middle ground.
Their interior and exterior designs are extraordinary. Unfortunately, they still are viewed and will be viewed as entry-level cars. And so some of their really nice offerings are fading away. The Mazda 6, which I think is the best car in its class, at least for styling, and a really good driving performance, unfortunately, is going away. People aren't buying sedans, and people aren't buying big sedans.
And speaking of Volvos, Nathan, that's number 7 on our list. It's an increase of 2,064, or 5.5%, the XC90, the big crossover.
The big crossover, that's their best-selling crossover. Well, no, it's not, actually. They're the second one.
The midsize.
The
60,
the XC60 is one of their best-selling ones. Yeah. But the 90 sells well for them.
The 90's old.
Yeah, well, it is an old platform. They do have a plug-in hybrid version of it.
Super turbo.
Yeah, and it's got the super turbo, which is basically a...
Supercharged, turbocharged,
right. So a four-cylinder engine that has a supercharger and a turbocharger, and what that does is it mitigates lag and still gives you the top-end power all in one package, and it's proven to be pretty effective.
Yeah, I think Volvo has a lot of new cars right now, like the Recharge, the all-electric cars?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I just talked to a guy, he just bought one.
Oh, yeah?
I was at the car wash, and I said, why'd you buy the Volvo? And he said he loved the look of it, and he liked the fact that it had over 200 miles of range. I said, why didn't you get, you know, something like a Tesla?
I knew you were going to say Tesla.
I was curious, you know, because, I mean, let's face it, for every one Volvo they sell 100 Teslas.
Yeah.
Electric Volvo, that is. So I was curious why he didn't go the Tesla route. And he had a lot of good reasons, and it's a good-looking car.
Well, you know what they did in my book? They kind of took the same playbook from Apple Design.
It did.
It looks a lot like the very clean,
very simple,
very simple, very elegant in terms of what they did. The curves are great. The way it feels in your hand, so to speak, is very similar. And I've noticed that with other Volvo products in the recent past is that they've been updating them and making them seem like they're Apple products.
Number six, Nathan, the Toyota Prius. It's up $971 or 5.4%. I think the thing about the Prius and the reason it's not, you know, look, Prius pioneered hybridization.
Yeah, in terms of popular hybridization.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so they, you know, but now I think the world has shifted and everybody's going more toward full electrics. And so I think the Prius, it doesn't mean it's not popular. It doesn't mean
it still sells.
Doesn't get incredible fuel economy.
Yeah.
But, you know, it was kind of that half step toward what eventually will be full electric. And maybe the Prius's time has come and gone.
Well, I don't agree.
I could be wrong.
No, Toyota, first of all, has been very resistant to go all electric. They are insistent that they can make a hybrid vehicle that is extraordinarily efficient, uses very little gas, creates very little greenhouse, and at the same time gives you electric range. And they managed to do that quite a bit with some of their products. In fact, recently I drove their Sienna minivan, and normally it's like, I don't care. You know, it's a minivan, so I'm going to talk about its interior. Dude, I was getting like mid to high 30s with that van, driving it like an ape.
Yeah, I know. It's crazy.
And it's crazy, and it had all-wheel drive.
So they pioneered that hybrid system. Yeah. And the other thing about the Prius to me, I think, is, you know, it's always kind of been designed to its own drummer.
You know, yeah, I'm not a fan of Prius design.
Yeah, the recent design is way out there.
Well, they wanted to get attention. They certainly did.
It's quite out much. There. Maybe it's a little too like a Tokyo nightlife, I guess, would be the design language.
Well, it's not, because the Koreans have managed to absolutely out-design Toyota when it comes to hybrids and now electric vehicles.
Well, it feels like the Prius and some of the electric cars out there look like they're trying really too hard to be futuristic. You know what I mean?
In some cases.
You don't have to, the design doesn't have to be futuristic. The design just has to be fresh and modern and clean, right? That says future to me. You don't have to have like the weird taillights and the swooping lines that intersect in really
right.
or, you know, unusual ways. That doesn't, you know, that's not the George Jetson car. I mean, to me, clean design that's minimalist is more futuristic than anything.
You just were out, what was it, Hyundai or Kia?
With the new Ioniq 5, which I thought was really cool.
Yes, exactly. And now you tell me about that design, because that was an awesome futuristic design that you can buy tomorrow.
Yeah, exactly. All right.
And,
number five on our list is the Audi Q7, 3.1% increase, $1,220. It's a big old Audi crossover.
Yeah, it's one of their better sellers. Once again, crossovers sell well for the German.
Q5 is their best seller. Yep. Once again, the midsize.
Yeah,
one.
But although the Audi builds good vehicles, they are not. How do I put it? They used to have passion, kind of imbued, and they lost a lot of that passion.
Well, I think one of the problems, I shouldn't say problem, one of the issues that all the Germans have to overcome is that their cars are starting to look all alike. So a Q7, a Q5, a Q3,
they all look the same.
Yeah, it's a little too much, you know. Give me some distinguishing something between them.
But a spicy looking version of something
it's all too like, you know, corporate identity.
Yeah,
and that's just a thing in German design right now.
Yeah, it's really bad right now, and it goes throughout all the German makers. Although Mercedes is starting to really make some really different looking cars that
Mercedes.
Yeah, give Mercedes credit on that.
Number four on the list, the GLC. Once again, the midsize crossover.
Which is a really good crossover.
It's up only 2%, $709. It's a good crossover.
Tommy recently did some videos on the GLCs.
Yeah, they're. They're interesting, you know. I mean, it's got that kind of more jelly bean design, right? So it's much more rounded. If anything, Audi's much more squared off. This is much more rounded. The GLC is, pushing in some ways the midsize crossover boundary by, infusing the midsize crossover with a lot of luxury and a lot of kind of, those interesting vents, right, that go across the whole.
It's a beautiful interior in
the
vehicle.
You know, now the giant screen. It's a cool car.
Yeah, I mean that is a bit of an increase, but it's not too bad. So far, knock on wood, they could be a lot worse.
All right, number three is a car we just bought, the one you didn't buy because it was a little too expensive, the Subaru Crosstrek. It's only up 1.4% or $314.
Okay, so...
I think they just build a lot of the...
they sell like crazy.
The Crosstrek, they're everywhere.
The Crosstrek is one of Subaru's best ideas because what they did was...
They
took the Impreza, which wasn't selling great, and they added just a couple things. They added a cool little applique with the front bumper, the rear bumper, gave it a cool roof rack, gave it a lift... changed the wheels around, and they went from, you know, kind of this wimpy kind of, you know, looking car to a, hey, you know, let's have some fun. It's a great looking car. I think it's the best looking vehicle in Subaru's fleet. I think it's way better looking.
I think it's the right size.
It's the right size. It's better looking. It needs a better looking interior.
Interior's dated.
Aesthetically, it's a little dated. But I think outside, and the colors they chose are fantastic because they're really bright and happy. That car is absolutely the best thing that Subaru builds. But for those of you who are serious about taking one off-road, Roman's recently done some videos, and we've done some stuff in the past. I recommend, and they still sell them, getting the automatic transmission one. A friend of mine bought the 6-speed, and he absolutely adores it, and that thing is a mountain goat.
So, couple things. I love the car. I think it's super, you know, we bought the base one, so mm-hmm. like rubber steering wheel, you know. They all come with
now. The less powerful engine.
Yeah, the 2-liter, 150 horsepower. They all come with EyeSight now, so they all have basically lane, keep, and self-steering.
Yeah.
And I was testing it in the mountains, and I was doing 75, and it kind of terrified me because it'll, like the Tesla will maintain 75 miles an hour, and it will steer around a corner at that speed. The Subaru will start into the corner, and then you flashes. Self-steering disengaged, and you're driving it. Which the first time that happens is a little terrifying because you get your hands on the wheel and you're kind of paying attention as you should be, but you're still expecting the car to be able to steer around the corner. It won't.
Yeah, we're talking about a highway corner too.
Right. So it's very, you know, you're going up like when you go Florida
gradual.
And you come down,
right.
And then you go down and you're coming through those little bendy parts before Idaho Springs.
So about 70 miles per hour, cruising.
That was 65.
Still, you're cruising through those things at a fair clip, so they're not tight bends, is the point.
Anyway, it won't do it. It'll just disengage. And the first time it happened, it was a little terrifying. But by the third time, I was expecting it. And by the fifth time, I'm like, if it's going to disengage, I'll just turn it off.
See, I never use those systems. Yeah. I don't even care.
But anyway, I think like if you're going to Denver and you're on a regular highway where it's stop and go, it'll work. It's just when you're going quickly around, you know, relatively sharp bends.
And the car's really efficient.
Yeah. Yeah, and I love the fact that ours has a key and it has, you know, nothing you don't need and everything you do need. So, like, you know, automatic climate control, but only not passenger and driver, only one. And, you know, radio has a tune knob and a volume knob.
But it still has Bluetooth and all that, too.
And, you know, you don't have to hunt around for the outside temperature. It's right there. It's displayed. And the back seat has plenty of room, even if I'm, you know, I'm this weird garage.
Driver and passenger seat are pretty comfortable
and
for big people.
And behind the, you know, back seat, there's plenty of room for Boise, who's over here sleeping.
Yeah. Hey, Poppy.
And it's just, I love the car, you know, and I was worried about the CVT, especially with the 2-liter, because, you know, now we're at like 7,000, 8,000, 9,000 feet.
Right.
And, you know, where you go past Georgetown, it gets really steep.
Oh, yeah.
So it was me and Blazy in the car, you know, we're both pretty heavy people and dogs. It did not struggle going up that hill.
I think if you had if you filled it with four passengers and had some cargo, I think it would struggle a little bit, but it would be okay.
If fakes shifting, so you know when you floor it, it just goes. You know.
Yeah, it has like a stepped gear thing.
Yeah, stepped gear. So that kind of fakes you into thinking you have a. And yeah, I know the look. Especially what I'm going to say next. I know the manual is better, but nobody buys a manual. I tried to get a manual because I thought...
Yeah, it's 4%.
Yeah, it's like you can't even get one.
Yeah.
So what's the point of getting a manual and reviewing it for a year when nobody owns it?
Which is completely reasonable. We bought the car that most people will be buying.
Exactly.
And we never get from the... we don't get anything from Subaru, but from the manufacturer in general, we rarely get an entry-level model. They want the nicest thing for us to present to you. So in this case, we're being realistic with what the vehicle is. You know, basically... Other than the manual transmission option, we got no options, right?
We got rubber mats.
Rubber floor mats, okay.
So it's $23,500, and we end up paying $25,000 for it.
Which is pretty good, considering. So, as Roman said, there is a $1,000, how much is it, uptake?
Well, right now they're up $314. So
$314. That's not too bad.
So we actually got one below sticker, and that was because I ordered it 2 months ago before it all hit the fan.
Right.
And also thank you to Peter West over at AAA. They have a car buying service. They do it here and in Texas and in Oregon, and they're great. They're
yeah, and there are a lot of other car buying services out there. We're just spotlighting this one because this is the one that helped us.
I've bought a bunch of cars through Peter. What they'll do is he actually got me the car under sticker, which is incredible, delivered it to my office, clean, and signed the paperwork here.
We need to send him a holiday ham or whatever
you
do.
Yeah, didn't have to go to the dealership.
Yeah.
So thank you, Peter. Thank you, AAA. I would highly recommend it. We're not getting paid for this.
Nope.
Nothing. It's just a really great service. Peter's actually retiring. Robert's taking his place. So if you call,
okay.
Call
well,
Robert.
Have a good retirement, Peter. So the thing is, once just finishing off on the Crosstrek is that I still think it's the best vehicle they build, and
I agree.
It's not. It's still on an off-roader, guys. It's
can I talk
not.
About that? So I did a video yesterday, you know, and you know, the conclusion of the video is now I know why Subaru won't give us vehicles because we proved that they're not what Subaru contends they are. So, you know, we were watching, of course. They didn't invite us to the recent wilderness.
Well, that was no surprise.
Right?
Yeah.
Then they were going up some quarry, and, you know, all the journalists are like, wow, this thing's great. It's got, you know, 10 inches of ground clearance, and it'll do everything. So, you know, we took it up our standard new hill, which is called Tombstone. Mm-hmm. Two sides, Truth or Dare. Usually what we do is we lock everything up right away because you don't want to get it stuck. But I was curious to see how good X mode was, right?
Yeah.
So I started going up.
Using X mode?
Yeah. No, I wasn't.
Oh, okay. At first you weren't.
And keep in mind, the most important thing you can have are good tires. Mm-hmm. And it comes with all seasons. Geolanders.
Yeah.
They're fine, but they're not.
I think they're perfectly fine for everyday use.
Yeah, they're great for dirt roads, but they're not dedicated off-road tires.
Right.
Right. So grip isn't grand. So I'm going up the easy side, which is Truth. I get about halfway up. You know where that goes, the V?
The
gets
fork.
Stuck.
So when you say get stuck, did it lose traction or did the engine, like, did it recharge power?
So what happens is I floored it. I kept it floored. The car goes up to 2,000 RPM and it just won't go. It just like you know, I was asking our videographer, were the wheels spinning? He said initially they were spinning and then they stopped spinning.
Okay. That's exactly what happened to us before.
Yeah, that's what happened to us before. So I'm like, okay, I'll put it in X mode. Put in X mode, you know, floor it. And it goes another 5 feet and gets stuck again. So I did get out with X mode. So what X mode does is it's just a algorithm that, you know, basically breaks the wheel that has no traction and sends part of the wheel that has traction,
mm-hmm.
right? And so I got it up like 5 more feet and then it got stuck again. And, you know, look, if you have a side-by-side and it has a CVT, what'll happen is if you really floor it, eventually that belt, right, which is a rubber belt, will glaze and then it'll get hot and it'll break.
Yeah.
But in a side-by-side, it's on the outside, you just stick a new belt on it, and you're on your way.
Right.
Not a big deal. And in a car, the CVT isn't a belt, it's a chain that rides up and down.
It's a metal, it's not like a chain, like a bicycle chain.
Yeah, it's like and if you break that, you're basically looking at like a $2,000 service,
because right.
it's buried in the engine.
Well, and so that's why they cut power, because they don't
want
to roast it, because it's a very simple setup, and if you grind it and force it to do something that it can't do, you're going to heat it up, you're going to break it, and then you destroy your transmission. So Subaru, what they do, other automakers do this as well, with their CVTs, when they're being strained and they can't do something, they cut power to the transmission, preventing it from eating itself. So it's both a good and bad thing.
So I used your method, you know, backed up a little bit, got a run at it.
Speed!
And then, actually, I tried hill descent control, which it has. That worked really well. So
yeah.
The braking worked really well. And then I'm like, okay, I'll go up there. I got to do it right. You can't like that. So I go up there, and I go to that part where the car gets really articulated. And that's in the wilderness video, by the way, that a lot of people did. There's never any articulation, right? It's like you're on a pretty steep, but there's no, like, the wheels are not. Like,
they're not trying to force one of the wheels off the ground
right,
to really
yeah.
show what the other wheels will do. Yeah, I noticed that, too.
You noticed that, right?
Yeah,
they're
yeah.
all four flat. So now the car has two wheels in the air, so you're really stressing it out, and it would not go up over that first part. It just wouldn't do it. I'm like, okay, I'm going to use the Nathan method.
Yeah.
So I backed it up.
Momentum.
Backed it up, went up, didn't do it. I'm like, oh, I'll try it again. On the fourth try, I did it. But
yeah.
the problem with momentum, Nathan, your method, is that things break.
Yeah, sometimes.
And so that's what happened with me.
Yeah. And that's,
here comes Blazy.
Yeah.
Basically, I scratched the bottom of the chin spoiler.
Yeah. One of the problems that you encounter with using momentum is that, yeah, indeed, you can break things. And
well, you lose control.
And the control isn't as good. So let's go into what we've gone through before with that Crosstrek. Tommy actually, and it's a pretty good video, put one of those, last year's model, I believe, on his roller test. And Tommy's roller test is the best way to test
yeah,
all-wheel drive
systems.
It's very scientific, and it's dry. All the all the emotion is taken out of it, and it's just a scientific method, and our method works really well. And the Subaru did not do particularly well on that one as well. It did the same thing. It cut power. Other vehicles in the same class don't. Lesser vehicles, as far as I'm concerned, were much more efficient at deploying power. So that is something that you really should keep in mind if you're serious about doing some actual off-roading.
Look, if you want to go and do like Moab stuff, you know, this is not, if you want to go overland, you want to go on dirt roads.
Yeah, it's perfectly fine.
It's fine. You know, like I say, I was really rooting for the car. I wanted to do well. And our plan is the next one we're going to do, we're going to try the one where we got in trouble, Cliffhanger 1.0. I want to compare it to our Pathfinder.
Oh, yeah.
See if like a modern car can do what a 26-year-old truck can do.
Yeah.
I'm curious. And then I want to do a little bit of a puck lift because you can't lift independent suspension, obviously. Not like, you know, you can raise it a little bit.
Yeah, yeah, you just spacers.
Yeah, yeah. Basically a puck lift and then put a little, you know, more aggressive tire on it.
I think it'd be a really good idea.
And then do the test again. That's the whole plan right there in a nutshell. And I'm rooting for it. I want it to do well. I love the car, but, you know, what am I going to, you know, what do you want me to do?
It all comes down to marketing.
That it doesn't.
Right.
Doesn't.
It comes down to marketing. And the problem, and this is one of the reasons why we're ostracized from certain organizations, the fact that they say that this is an off-road vehicle. They hint at it. They show it doing stuff that, frankly, it really can't do very comfortably. I know a lot of Subaru fans out there will disagree. However,
wait for the hate mail.
Yeah, which we get, and I'm totally fine with that.
And you know what? I think we've put this out there before. I'll put it out there again. If you want to prove us wrong, bring your Subaru.
Yep.
With a CVT.
Yep.
Manual is completely different.
We know the manual is a different setup.
Yeah. Bring your whatever you want, your Subaru with a CVT, and come and show that it can go up Cliffhanger.
Show us what we're doing wrong.
Yeah.
Show us what we're doing wrong.
Yeah,
but it's your car, and you drive it up, and also you can't be modified. Well, the whole point.
I don't care if you want to lift it. That's fine.
But yeah, but you know, you never know. You know, some guy put a locker in it. God only knows.
If you got a locker, yeah.
Come on. But no. Honestly, if you want to do that,
no
go
rockets.
Ahead and do it. You know, prove us wrong. We'll take you over there. We'll film you. And after signing some releases, so you don't sue us for looking embarrassed. You don't make it up that hill very easily. And also, more importantly, if you destroy the car trying to get up the hill, it won't be on us. The thing that it all comes down to is, simply put, it's a very good all-weather car. It's a good all-wheel drive car. They are considered fairly reliable, and they are considered extremely safe. Their safety numbers are some of the best in the market. But consider the fact that if you're serious about off-roading, there are other choices.
It's not a Wrangler.
No, it's not, and
it's
it never
not.
Will be.
It just isn't.
Yeah.
Yeah, it isn't. Or it isn't the Trailhawk.
No, it cannot compete with even the.
Well, it doesn't have a low range.
Well, we just tested the Ford Baby Bronco, the Bronco Sport,
which is better.
And the Bronco Sport will absolutely eat it alive off road.
Yeah. All right, let's keep going. We have to wrap this up.
Yes.
We're running out of time. Number two is a car that Andre just purchased from TFL. It's the BMW i3. I think that's a bargain. I love that car.
Well, what's the increase on it?
It's the first car that actually decreased 0.4. it increased 0.4. $91 it increased, but. That car is the if I needed a city car, I would get that car all day long. They're super cheap. We bought ours for $14 with the Rex, right? The little range extender.
Now it did have some issues, but we took care of those.
Yeah, it was under it was CPO'd.
Yeah,
but I love that car. I think BMW nailed it out of the ballpark. I think it doesn't get enough love because of the weird thin little tires. People just didn't.
They don't like the shape of it, which is a shame. You know, that is a bespoke BMW. It doesn't share any of its panels with anything else, and it has like a whole special cage that they built for the car itself. It's extremely safe.
It's like carbon fiber-ish. Yeah, it's really cool.
And they use a lot of special materials. I love driving them.
And they're like $50,000 new and used. You can get them for $14,000. And they're great little cars.
And apparently only a little above $14,000 according to this number, which is good. Roman and I both agree, and Andre, obviously, it's a bargain. And if you want a really good electric vehicle that has a range extender, very smart buy.
Yeah. And then you can jailbreak the range extender to get more fuel tank use and to get more range. It's great. I'd love to get. I'm waiting for they just killed it, so I'm waiting for like the one with the bigger battery, right? The one that only had like 60 miles of range on the battery, but the new ones I think go up to like 150.
That's the one I was looking
at. Double the battery.
Yeah.
But those are in like $50,000 right now.
Yeah.
So we'll wait for it to, you know, depreciate, and then we'll get one.
And that's the thing, is that they do depreciate rather quickly.
And the number one car, this is the only car on the list that actually decreased.
Uh-huh.
Everything else increased. This went down 2% or $1,077. The Tesla Model S.
That's no surprise. It's been around forever.
I think you're right. Yeah. What is it now? I think, well, 11 years for Tesla, right, as a company. So at least 11 years.
Well, I think it's closer to 9 years.
Well, when it was actually the Roadster made. Was the first one.
Yeah, the Roadster, which didn't last very long. But the S is their first real model in terms of proper competitive.
And
it also put them on the map.
Yeah, I think also the fact that, you know, it's very expensive, so it will depreciate.
And they're huge.
Yeah.
It's a big car.
It's a big car.
Yeah, not, and you know, a lot. I know a relative of mine, he's a cook, associé actually, in San Francisco. And he bought one, and he loved it at first, but they couldn't park it. There was like no place to park it, so he got the three.
It's also indicative of the fact that, you know, you're buying yesterday's tech.
Yeah, it's an old tech vehicle. Granted, they're still the fastest ones out there. They have ridiculously powerful versions. But right now, Porsche builds the new Taycan, whatever.
Taycan, yeah.
And that's a better looking, more sport-oriented vehicle in my book.
I just think with electric cars, as you know, because you've got a Leaf, right?
Yeah.
You're not paying a lot for old electric cars, but you're not getting the latest, greatest.
No. The tech that's in my daughter's car is so old by comparison. It's crazy. And
it's like an old iPhone, right?
Yeah. It's like an old iPhone.
My stepfather just got the old SE, right? Uh-huh. I want to say it was like $400, right? And he loves it because it still has the push, you know, the button. As opposed to stupid.
You can physically push the button.
Yeah, I love that too. I miss that so much. I don't know why Apple went away from it.
I tried to buy one of those flip phones for my sibling when he's in his mid-50s. But it's still a very good car. I mean, build quality on those cars has improved over time, probably because they've been building them forever. But yeah, now you can get them at relatively good prices despite the increase. However, recently, Tesla did increase their prices.
Yeah, they've been increasing them kind of in a sneaky way. They're like, not the X or the S.
Yeah.
I think they actually stopped production on those for now. That's the latest. But they have increased the Model 3 and the Y. Uh-huh. And it's been like $300 here, you know, $400 there. And I think over the last 2 months, they've increased them by like $2,000.
So yeah.
It's kind of sneaky. They just haven't gone like $2,000. Like,
yeah, and they don't announce anything because they really don't have any press or anything. They just went go and do it. And, you know, it's... The company, Roman idolizes their cars for good reason. They're fast.
I don't idolize them. I don't idolize it, but I respect the fact that they have completely broken the mold and have created a new paradigm for car buying. So I was listening to this podcast, Seen Through Glass,
uh-huh.
And they were arguing about, you know, if electric cars are the future, and I had this idea that. In the UK, if you're into like traditional ICE, right? I hate that word too.
Internal combustion.
It's kind of a way to kind of, you know, mock traditional cars.
To a certain, I don't like it either.
But you know what they're called in the UK, right? They're called petrolheads.
Yeah.
Right. So what they're identifying when you think about it is not the car itself, but with what powers the car.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, Nathan, I don't give a rat's ass what powers it. I'm all about the car or the truck.
Mm-hmm.
So to me, whether there's a battery or a fuel cell or a big old V8, it's not about that necessarily. It's about the performance and what the car makes me feel like. So I'm not like hung up. I'm not a petrol head. I don't care, you know, if it's diesel or if it's gas or if it's electric or if it's fuel cell. What I care about is the car itself, and that has not changed. And to me, an electric car is like a car that is something completely different, something that's completely new. I'm not going to say better or worse than an internal combustion, but it's different and it's cool. It's like, in some ways, I got to tell you, I was listening to another podcast, the truck show, you know, that Sean does,
mm-hmm.
And they had Gail Banks on there.
Yeah.
And he started talking about like, you know, he does turbocharging, right? He does like, you know, high powered diesel.
Oh, yeah. He super boosts diesels and whatnot.
Right, yeah. And he started talking about, you know, like cubic things of air and, you know, how that determines. I've heard that, I'm not the youngest guy anymore, but I've heard that so many times, right? That conversation about, like, you know the difference between superchargers. It's so, like, there's nothing new. There's nothing different about it. It's the same conversation guys were having, you know, when I was born. Really, literally, it is.
No, it ways of creating... Power, you know, more boost and power into an engine or even a diesel.
I'm bored of it. I'm like, let's move on. Let's do something different. And that's why I find electric cars so interesting, because instead of, you know, slapping on a supercharger, you get a computer, plug it in, and you can tune it that way. Or fuel cell cars, whatever that will mean, right?
Mm.
However you increase horsepower and the output of those. That's all it is with me. It's not a love of the company. It's not a love of the, it's just, it's different, it's new, it's fun, it's fresh, it's cool. And that's where I'm at.
I'm willing to bet Bitcom that there are going to be some interesting changes at Tesla.
I hate Bitcom.
I can't stand it. So, but the other part of this whole thing, of course, is that the vehicles we talked about, some of them are really good high-tech bargains, potentially, that have still gone up in price. So to wrap this whole thing up, I think that you guys out there who are searching for used cars, beware. A lot of people are going to upcharge you on them.
Maybe the market is what the market is.
The market is what it is. And, you know, at the very least, if you're trying to get rid of a car, now might be a really good time to do it.
If you're going
to
sell. And by the way, thank you to all of our patrons out there. So you guys, you know, we know you are.
Thank you again, guys.
We appreciate it. It lets us do things like this. You know, a lot of the podcasts, when they're on the audio version, right? Uh-huh. The first 20 minutes are commercials. You'll note that we get right into it. So, you know, that's because we've got a lot of great patrons that help us do that. All right, Blazy. I think Blazy needs to go, you know what?
Yes, good timing.
He seems to be in the mood.
He's going back and forth between the two of us trying to tell us something. So we don't want to
stink up our studio.
No, it's a really bad idea. So thank you, guys. We'll see you next time. Take care.
Ciao.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.